The number of Indigenous Australians behind bars has been labelled a major disgrace by the Australian Bar Association, which is now calling for the abolition of mandatory sentences for a range of minor offences. Incarceration rates for Indigenous Australians are at least 16 times higher than for non-Indigenous people. The Australian Bar Association says bail laws and mandatory sentences contribute to the high numbers of Indigenous people behind bars. It's almost 25 years since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody delivered its report calling for jail to be a last resort. Earlier, I spoke to the president of the Bar Association, Patrick O'Sullivan, QC, and I began by asking what's changed.
Well, it doesn't look like it has. The rate of Indigenous incarceration in Australia has increased, almost doubled in that time. And let's just put that into perspective. Currently, the rate of Indigenous incarceration is about 27% of the prison population compared to a 3% population of Australians.
So can you give me an example of the type of laws that are resulting in a disproportionate number of Indigenous people behind bars?
Currently, in some states and territories, mandatory sentencing regimes which have the effect, what we say is a disproportionate effect on Indigenous incarceration. For example, a 16-year-old with one prior conviction, stole a bottle of spring water and received a 28-day prison sentence. A 17-year-old, first-time offender, 14 days in prison for stealing orange juice and minties. This is just ridiculous. The situation is that there are offences for which there should not be a term of imprisonment imposed, and yet they are.
That's a case that's remained in place for decades. So how are you going to convince states to amend or remove mandatory sentencing laws?
We say that there's three ways of addressing it. The first is to amend or remove mandatory sentencing in relation to those offences which don't warrant it. This is not remove mandatory sentencing as a whole. You wouldn't consider removing mandatory sentencing for the coward's punch or domestic violence, but for minor assaults, minor theft, some minor driving offences that carry a term of imprisonment, get rid of them. Similarly, for default in paying fines, there is no point in imprisoning for that. Instead, use the money that you save by not imprisoning and turn that back into justice reinvestment and start curing the problem at its source.
It might be easy for you to say to state police ministers and premiers and chief ministers in the territories, get rid of these laws, but the political reality is that they often are used, particularly in election campaigns, to show that a political party is tough on crime. How do you break that nexus?
Well, I don't accept the expression tough on crime or hard on crime. It's a populist expression used to pander to a particular audience. The reality of the position is that any offence has with it or carries with it a particular set of circumstances. Now, some of those offences carry or warrant a term of imprisonment irrespective of the circumstances, but a lot of them don't. And what we're saying is, well, look at these minor offences that are costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in terms of the cost of keeping a person in prison, and remove the mandatory sentencing.
How difficult might it be to bring about that change, though? For example, recently the High Court ruled that the Northern Territory's so-called paperless arrest laws, which allow police to arrest and detain people for up to 4 hours for minor offences such as drinking in public or swearing or making too much noise, that the High Court upheld those laws. So how do you bring about change when the highest court in the land says something like that can exist?
Well, what the High Court said was that it was within power. What you've got to do is to change your attitude. I mean, this is a major disgrace. That's the reality of it. And unless attitudes change, unless parties are willing to make a change, well, then we're going to continue to be complaining about it in another 20 years' time. What I'm saying and what the Australian Bar is saying is that take a good look at it. Address these minor sentences that don't warrant terms of imprisonment and use the savings from not keeping a prisoner incarcerated, but reinvest that back into solving the problem.
You've recently met with the Federal Attorney General, George Brandis. What did you ask him to do?
Well, I don't really want to go into any discussions I have with attorneys. It's a principle I have that I don't do that.
Given that a lot of these laws are state-based, though, is there a role for the federal government to play?
Well, I think so. He's the first law officer in the country. He's on regular communication with his state and territory counterparts. And he can lead the way. He can develop the strategy and take a lead.
And are you also planning to meet with state attorneys general?
Well, I want to try and I'm only in this position for a year, but I want to try and get round to see all the state and territory attorneys during the course of that year. And I'll be having, if I can, discussions with them about what we can do to address this problem.
Do you think justice targets should be set as part of the Closing the Gap annual report, which at the moment focuses mainly on health and education targets?
I think so. Justice targets are really part and parcel of the bigger picture. You can't isolate one particular problem from all the other problems, whether it be health, education, justice. And so you need to be very much aware of what the ramifications are of particular policies and how they relate to Indigenous incarceration.
President of the Australian Bar Association, Patrick O'Sullivan, QC, speaking to me from Adelaide.